Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got no.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Coming up on the show today, the grinder, Michael Mizrachi, a guy who arguably could be the player of the year at the 2010 World Series of Poker, the man who won the 50K Players Championship on the first weekend of the WSOP, and who was also there on the last weekend of the WSOP, because he has made the final table of the main event. He is one of the November 9. Hi, I'm Paul Harrah, sitting aside Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips, who knows the grinder pretty well, right?
I do, and I know 8 people who hope he is not the player of the year this year. So,
you know what? Even if I think he has to win this to get technically the player of the year points to get that title.
Yeah.
But I think winning the 50K and making the final table of the main event makes him player of the year.
In a lot of people's mind, it would. In my mind, it would. But there are some other people that ground out up, what was it, 7 different caches, 7 different tournaments?
And there's a guy named Frank Casella who, you know, did better. I think he got 3 final tables or 3 bracelets or, you know, whatever it was. He had a terrific summer. I'm not taking anything away from him. Yeah. But these are the 2 bookends and
the two
biggest events. And the grinders involved in winning one and making the final table of the other.
Winning one, and we'll see on the second one.
Yeah. You know what's interesting is a lot of people just 2 years ago were saying, we'll probably never see a pro win the main event again.
Yep.
And a pro hasn't won it since 2001, Carlos Mortensen. A big name pro anyway. But last year you had Phil Ivey, who got to that final table, one of the biggest names in the world of poker, came in 7th, of course. Now you got Michael Mizrachi, who, by the way, is 12th on the all-time tournament winnings list.
Yeah, people don't realize it. I mean, from 05 on, I believe this guy has just really done very, very well.
Yep.
He had a little cold spell in there for about a year where he didn't hit a whole lot of things. But this is a heck of a player.
Yep. $9 million or so.
Yeah. And, I mean, he's right up there.
Yeah.
And it's spread over a number of different tournaments, a number of different games. This guy knows how to play poker, and he plays it for a living down there in Florida, and he is loving Florida, I'll bet, right now.
We have to ask him about that.
Absolutely.
He'll join us in about 15 minutes. The grinder, Michael Mizrachi, coming up here at the final table. We are sitting at table 2 at Harrah's St. Louis, where I spent a few hours last week. I haven't played any No Limit lately. I decided to go back to Limit Poker, and I sat down in the 2040 game here both Wednesday and Friday of last week. Had 1 winning session, 1 losing session.
Sweet.
This was the game that I used to play for years before No Limit Poker took over. And a lot of the guys and women who were in it then were still in it and are still in it now. And still a couple of tables of it. It's a 20-40 with a half kill, by the way. So you do get some big pots when you get that 30-60 action going. But it was fun to do that and remember the different discipline of playing Limit Poker, where, you know, if you raise pre-flop and then somebody 3-bets you, you're always calling.
Yeah.
Which is not true in No Limit Poker. So, you know, it's very interesting to have to remember how many bets are in there and what your pot odds are. It's a different discipline.
Well, see, that's what's so impressive about when, like, they go to Bobby's room and they play some of these others. When Jennifer Harmon said they play 12 different games in there, you know, rotating them.
Yep.
The idea that you can 12 different games, remembering the discipline, remembering the betting, remembering everything on this, that's pretty awesome.
And most of what they're playing, by the way, is Limit Poker.
Yes. It absolutely is.
Yeah.
Limit poker can be a lot harder than No Limit.
It can be, and the variance can be much greater as well.
Yes, it can.
Because it's almost always right to call with a draw and on and on and on.
Yeah.
Anyway, where have you been? You've not played poker for a while.
I have not. I went up to Wisconsin. The dairy farm up there with my sister. Got to go visit the cows.
Mm-hmm.
But better than that, did something I'd never done before. Well, did about 3 things I'd never done before. First of all, I went to the PGA, Whistling Straits.
Uh-huh.
Spent 3 days over there.
Wow.
Awesome. Let me tell you, those guys are amazing. I sat on the par 3 17th, where it's 239 yards to the hole. It's like 12 yards across on the green. And by the way, if you go to the left, there's a place called Lake Michigan there. Yeah. A rather large body of water.
And I'm not a big golf fan, but I watched some of the highlights on SportsCenter,
yep.
And the lake effect wind was having a big effect
it's
on these
huge.
Golfers.
But these guys are up there, and literally they're having to stand, and the wind is blowing around, and they're hoping it'll die down a little bit. Because it can push that ball, you know, 10 or 12 feet one way or the other.
Wow.
Easily.
Yeah.
And if it dies down in mid-stroke, you're going, I am so, so in trouble. So
that's nice that you got to go to the PGA.
I did that. I did two other things I'd never done before. We went up the Tall Ships. We're actually up at Green Bay, which is just north of there, about 45, 50 minutes. For you, anybody that doesn't know, because I wasn't very familiar with it, it's actually sailing ships. They're replicas of like the Ninta, the Bounty, other ones back from 50, 100, 200 years ago.
Like with three masts and huge sails?
Oh, some of them down with only two masts and one mast. I looked at some of these. One of them said it was equipped with a crew of 42.
Okay.
I walked in there. Mm-hmm. There's no way in the world I'm going to be that friendly with 41 other guys.
Kind of a small space, you're saying?
Not going to happen, guys. I'm telling you, there was room to bunk 21 people down below.
Uh-huh.
That meant that half of the crew at all time was up on deck, no matter what the weather was, exposed to the elements.
You're out there on the Atlantic or the Pacific or even the lake, and a big storm comes up?
Yep.
You're either sharing a bunk and getting really friendly with your crewmate, or half the guys are upstairs tying themselves to the mast.
That's pretty much it, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. There's no way. I looked at the replica of the ships that had sailed across the Atlantic, 500 years ago. These guys were brave.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you, there's no way I'm going that little rattle trap thing and saying, okay, I'll see you in 6 months, hopefully.
Yeah.
Or 6 years, maybe, for all I know.
Maybe 6 years, yeah. But
this is the coolest thing we did, though. I went up there, and I also went over and watched the Packers practice.
Now, you've been to Lambeau Field before.
Yeah, I've been up there. My brother-in-law has some season tickets. He's invited me up there. I actually watched the Rams play up there at Lambeau Field. It's a great place, great atmosphere. The people are awesome.
Is that where the practice was?
No, it was right across the street from Lambeau Field. They go from the chalk room and the offices there, and then they go across the parking lot over to Hudson Center, which is where they have the practice field. But now how they get there is amazing.
Yeah.
This is just hilarious. We are standing there waiting for them to come across the parking lot. And there's this little caravan coming of little bitty tricycles and bicycles with these football players riding on them and some kid running along beside them just happy as can be because there's this lineman now riding his bicycle to practice.
So the kids are bringing their bikes to the
yes,
to Lambeau
do.
Field, waiting
yes,
outside.
Uh-huh.
And when the Packers come out to come across the field to practice, they ride the kids' bikes?
They come out in almost like single file, grab the first, whoever's the kid the first in line is, they grab his bike and go. And there are some tiny bikes there. This was so hilarious to watch these mountain men climb on this bike that comes up to their knee.
I've never heard of this. There must be video somewhere. This sounds hysterical.
I got a few pictures of it, and I'm going to post some of them. But it's hilarious. Lumpkin, the running back from there, who's not one of the bigger guys,
mm-hmm.
He got the luck of the draw and got the smallest bike this time. It did not come up to his knees.
Yeah, I bet.
And he is hunkered over this thing, and he's trying to pedal it, and the knees are coming up, hitting him on the chin. But there's this happy little kid running right along beside him, just tickled to death.
Sure.
And they get to the end, and they autograph something for him. This one lineman stood up. I mean, he didn't have to get off the bike. He stood up, reached between him, grabbed it with a paw, pulled it up over, and planted it right next to the kid, said, "Here's your bike back."
Now, do the kids jockey for position? So, you know, one of them gets Aaron Rodgers or one of the other big names?
Well, it's kind of luck of the draw, the way it is. They line up there, and whoever comes out first gets the first one in line. And
wow.
The way it goes. So, but, yeah, it's a great way for them to get autograph and meet the players. The players were great about it and the interaction they had. It was awesome.
Well, that's great. Nice to get away. I mean, if you're going to get away from poker, that's a nice vacation you had there.
That's a good little area up there, yeah.
So when are you getting back to playing poker, since that's what this show is about?
All right. I am leaving and going to Calgary. Going to be up there for the Canadian Poker Open. It's going to be a number of different events. I think it's 11 total. The major one that I'm playing in is the Heads Up. 128 people in the field, one-on-one, same as the NBC Heads Up was.
What's the buy-in?
$5K, $5,000.
Oh, okay.
The first price will be, I think, $170,000.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the structure. They have this thing set up. Every round is best 2 out of 3. Every round is a structure that you can actually play some poker. It's going to take hours up there of playing.
So are you saying it's better than the NBC Heads
Up? Absolutely
better. Which you came in third in this year?
Correct.
Yeah.
No, it is absolutely better than that. It is better than the one at the WSOP.
Wow.
Yeah, this one, Phil Hellmuth was up there last year. He said it's the best structure he's ever seen for head-up.
Wow. Who's going to be there? Any other pros this year?
Yeah, there'll be a number of them. Gavin Smith is going to be there. Mike the Mouth will be up there. Mm-hmm. There'll be a number of people up there because it is it's a high-caliber play, and they love the structure.
Nice.
It'll be my first time up there.
Nice.
So we'll see what happens, but I'm ready for it.
You remember how to play poker? It's been a long time.
I think it'll come back to me. If not, I'll ask the grinder because he definitely knows how to play.
All right. Now, before we get to the grinder, which we'll do in a couple of minutes, first, an email from a listener named Jason Moore, who wrote to DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. That's the address we have for the show. Last week, we were talking about a guy named Sam McMaster who was caught with 26 felony charges of securities fraud, but he's been allowed to stay out of jail to play poker to try to make enough money to pay back his victims. Remember that story?
I remember that one, yes.
And he's in New Mexico, and we wondered, are there card rooms in New Mexico? Because I've never been there, and either of you. Yeah. So Jason emailed to say, I live in New Mexico, love listening to your show, just want you to know that there are casinos in New Mexico on Indian reservations. There's a nice poker room in Albuquerque at the Sandia Casino. Overall, 10 or 12 poker room casinos.
Sweet.
So okay. There you go. He says the stakes aren't that high, and he thinks that guy, Sam McMaster, is going to have a hard time making that $500,000 nut that he's got to make to pay everybody off. But there you go.
He has a pretty good incentive, though.
Thank you, Jason, for writing. TV, we've got to talk about some of the coverage last week of the main event. ESPN started their coverage with days 1A and 1B of the main event. Tonight will be 1C and 1D on Tuesday night. We saw a lot of Annette Oberstadt. And you and I have talked about the hype for Annette that we saw at the Rio this summer at the World Series of Poker, which we thought was unwarranted, not because she's not a good player, but because it was unfair for her in her first WSOP.
It's undue pressure to put on a 21-year-old. There's no doubt about it.
Well, that 21-year-old thing, I think, comes into play here because I watched Annette in a couple of hands, and she acted, I don't want to say it was Phil Hellmuth-like, but it was really snotty. That's the only phrase I can think of to use it. Her attitude was just snotty. I'll give you an example. In one hand, she limped under the gun with a pair of nines. A guy in late position with a pair of jacks raised 6X. Okay? She calls. The flop comes 10 high. He bets. She shoves with only about 6,000 left. Now, you start with 30K right. In the main event. She's only got about 6,000 left. And he thinks for a few seconds before finally making the call. And she says, you're not slow rolling me with an overpair, are you? And he said, it's jacks. It's not a slow roll in the main event here. And she says, well, it is when I have 6K left. And she said it with a snotty attitude just like that, which I thought was completely inappropriate. I mean, it is the main event, and here's an amateur that she's playing against. It's not another pro. And she says it that way. Anybody in that situation who sees somebody limp under the gun and then come over the top, you've got jacks, the worst hand to play in poker. Aren't you going to have to think for a little while before you call? Is that an insta-call?
Depending on his chip stack and everything like that, I would doubt that it's an insta-call. In a main event, nothing is an insta-call almost.
Yep.
I don't care if I'm sitting with aces there. I'm going to take a deep breath and make sure and kind of think things out for a second.
Yep.
In fact, I recommend most people do that. So I don't see how that could be a slow roll. The pressure that's put on some of these people, especially some a 21 or 22 or 25-year-old, I don't care even if you're a 50-year-old, if you've never been in that before and all of a sudden you've got the cameras on you, it makes a heck of a difference.
Yep.
But, you know, hopefully she'll kind of adjust to the situation, shall
well,
we say.
Well, hopefully. By the way, she hit a 9 on the turn and won the hand.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, on the hand she went out on, she overshoved with ace-jack on a 9-deuce-deuce board. The original bettor, a pro, middle-aged guy by the name of Chris Bjorn, European guy.
I know Chris very well.
He's got
very good.
55 caches to his name. He has queen-queen. He calls.
Yep.
And she says, this is the hand that knocked her out. She keeps saying, nice call. Like he shouldn't have made the call there on a 9-deuce-deuce board with a pair of queens.
On that, she better back up. Chris is one of the most respected players around. As you said, he started going out to the main event in the mid-80s, I think. Now, I played him over in Europe at Monte Carlo. This guy knows how to play poker.
Yeah. Now, this is a guy who makes a good call there and knocks her out. And I got to give her credit for another hand where she made an amazing laydown. She folded the under full. She had fours full of jacks. Another guy had jacks full of sevens. He raised her on the river after smooth calling all the way, and she laid it down. That was a great big-time pro play there. But the rest of the way she acted, Now, you and I know that she signed to Full Tilt Poker.
Yeah, that's...
I wonder if another Full Tilt pro, maybe even Howard Lederer, would take her aside and say, you know what? You're wearing our brand at the main event of the World Series of Poker at a featured table. You're getting a lot of camera time here. You can't be snotty. You can't act like that. That's not going to be your image. I know you're 21 years old, and maybe there's some immaturity involved there. But the way she was treating the other players was completely uncalled for, in my opinion.
I have not seen the show.
Have you run into her in other tournaments or heard about her acting
yes.
this way elsewhere?
I've run into her in other tournaments. I've always put it the fact that she's a little bit shy, a little bit introvert off the table.
Yeah.
And that maybe on the table then she, you know, tries to hold her own. Because she is a woman. She is young. She has a lot of people, at least in the last couple of years, have picked on her and have tried to push her around
sure.
at the table.
Yeah.
You know, that's typical. That's what people would try to do. So maybe she does have a little bit of a chip on her shoulder from that, having to keep proving herself time and time again. But I would hope that she doesn't develop that kind of an attitude. I'm sorry, we only need one Phil.
Yeah, you're not going to prove yourself with that attitude, and by the way, with that play.
Yeah, that's not too hot a play.
She went
probably.
Out on day 1B. Coming up next, the guy who made it past day 1 and day 2 and 3, 4, 5, and made it all the way to the November 9, the grinder, Michael Mizrachi, is our guest in just a moment here on the final table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris. This portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.net, which has a lot of stuff coming up.
Oh, unbelievable. I mean, not only do we have the EPT London and the rest of it, I'm going down to Argentina for the LAPT Grand Finale there in the middle of September. But they have something coming up starting September 5th, and over 50 million guaranteed in a series of tournaments called the WCOOP. It's a world championship of online poker. Mm-hmm. You can go to PokerStars.net, qualify for free, play your way up, and play in these tournaments. And I'm telling you, the rewards are phenomenal. I've played in the last couple of years. I've done fairly well. But the fields are massive. And I'm telling you, if you want to learn how to play and do it, you might as well play at the best. And the best is PokerStars right now.
We'll be right back with more of the final table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And our podcasts, downloadable via iTunes or from thechipleader.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
If you played in the World Series of Poker this year and your name was Mizrachi, you had a very good summer. And it didn't really matter what your first name was because all four Mizrachi brothers cashed in the main event. Donnie and Eric and Robert and our guest now, Michael Mizrachi, the grinder. Welcome to the final table, Michael.
What's going on, guys?
We're here enjoying the hot weather. I hear you're enjoying it in Cyprus.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it, but I'm on a nice island in Cyprus overlooking the beautiful water, and it's already 11:20 at night. Over there, it's probably about, I think it's 3:20 if I'm correct.
Yep. Right in
so
the middle
we
of
have
it.
An 8-hour time difference.
All right. I was just telling some guys off the air here that if I was sitting at a final table, I would not want you sitting at the table with me. There's no way. We played a few different times at the Chip Leader Challenge. We played at the main event last year. I played with your brother, who also was a very capable player. I don't care that you're seventh in chips. You've got to be almost the odds-on favorite to win this. How the devil are you going to approach this table?
Well, Dennis, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
yeah.
guys.
No problem.
I'm going to approach the final table. I'm just going to, you know, play my game, make my adjustments, you know, towards the players. I don't know the players that well. The only one I played with for a while was John Raisiner. So all the guys are new to me. And and when it came down to 10 hand, it was my first few times playing with those guys. And it was pretty solid table. And everyone was trying to make the November 9. So no one actually really played their game. They're playing more like a satellite style.
We've had two of the other November Niners on, John Raisiner, who you mentioned, and last week we had the short stack, Jason Senti, on. And I want to ask you a question that we asked both of them, which was when you got down to 10 players and you were playing from 10 to 9 to make the November 9, were you playing thinking to yourself, I don't care what happens here, I am not going out in 10th place, I've got to be one of the November 9?
I was definitely thinking that because the value for me making November 9 was a lot greater than finishing 10th place, and it was a lot more money on the line. And I think just, you know, the prestige just to make the November 9, it's such a prestigious event. I mean, it was so big for a big name player to make it, and it's important for, you know, a lot of those big name pros. I'm sure they're glad to see me out, you know, making the November 9. And you know, I've done a great job with short stacks, and I've been, you know, bad situation before and overcame it and end up winning it. And as to as when I had a big stack, you know, nothing but my mana, I fell out first. So I like my spot right now. I'm seventh out of nine in chips, and it was so important for me to make it, and it made me definitely a lot more money, and it's good for your sponsors, and it's just very important to me, and I feel like I have a great shot.
Well, I tell you, the word on the street is that you played a great poker from about 27 players on. You were one of the short stacks, and you just couldn't be knocked off the table. So congratulations on that. My question is the play going to change now? Because now it's not so much for the money, because at 9th, 8th, 7th, 6th, there's not a huge amount of difference. So you've made the final table. You are one of the November 9. Now you need to be one of the top 2 or 3. So do you sit back a little bit? Do you get more aggressive? Do you try to put pressure on the other players? Just, you know, there's a dozen different ways to play it, and I'm not for sure what the right way is.
Well, the first thing, I want to definitely get past the 7th place mark, because that's where Phil Ivan and Chino Ream finished the last 2 years. So if I could pass the number, if I finish past 7th place, I'm going to guarantee I'm getting top 2. And that's my goal. That's the start first. That's my game plan. So I'm probably going to tighten up when it comes down to 6. And when it comes to 6 players, there goes the grinder's attack mode.
Interesting. Now, the blinds are going to be 250 and 500,000. You've got about 14 million, which means you've got 28 big blinds. You're not in a have-to-shove kind of position here. But early on, you know, are you going to be looking to pick on those short stacks? Or, you know, how do you look at that with 28 big blinds at the final table?
You know, short stacks, big stacks, if I got it, I'm sticking it in. But, you know, I'm just going to play more grinder style, it's going to be hard to play small ball with those blinds, but I'm going to try to maneuver my chips around. And I want to pick up chips here and there and make sure I have enough chips where I can overcome a bad beat and, you know, and just, you know, take the bad luck out of the way and just hopefully run good. I'm trying to prevent seeing flops. I'm going to make a lot of pre-flop plays and try to move people off pre-flop. And then when I start gaining chips, I'm going to play a lot of post-flop.
Okay, so are you doing more controlling of the pot size then, pre-flop?
Well, definitely. I might make, you know, I don't know. It depends on my table. I like where I sit, and I believe I'm in the 5 seat, and I got position on the bigger stack. So I like my spot, and I like where I'm at. And, you know, I'm going to try to obviously stay away from the bigger stacks for now, because, you know, they might be, I don't want to be committed to a call where if those smaller stacks, once I shove, you know, and they don't want to put the tournament online, but those guys can take a few risks, those bigger stacks.
Yep.
So I'm going to try to, you know, play against the smaller stacks for now. But we'll see. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, anything can happen. I never thought I'd make the November 9 when I had a million and a half left. So, I mean, you know, miracles do happen. And, you know, if I just on top of my game and stay focused and never give up, you never know. I just pull this one off.
Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris talking with the grinder, Michael Mizrachi, here on the final table. We mentioned earlier in the show that you had the greatest World Series of Poker bookends in a long, long time by winning the 50K Players Championship early on and then making the final table of the main event at the end. Everybody knows that you and your brother Robert were at that final table of the 50K, and you knocked him out. And I'm curious about the hand that you two played heads up that ended up being his last hand there, where you opened the button for 200,000 with the Queen of Hearts, Jack of Clubs, and Robert, who's the big blind, shoves 465,000 more over you. It turns out he's got the Ace of Clubs and the Ten of Hearts, which is certainly a legitimate shoving hand. But I'm curious, and you ended up hitting a jack on the turn and eliminating him, but I'm curious at that point, what did you put your brother on there that made you call off another 465K in chips?
Well, it was a situation where most people like thought, you know, I have to call, and I thought I had a call there, and you know, it was pretty much committing myself. If anybody shoves there, I'm probably most likely making the call with my last. I don't know. I think I'd make a million left. I'm not exactly sure, but you know, I said, you know, this was a time where, you know, where I have to get back at my older brother, and I thought it was a good spot to get him. No, guys, I'm kidding. But I just felt like, I had to make the call. And I thought his range was around 9s or 8s or 8s, 10s, somewhere in that vicinity, and I was pretty much correct. So at the price, I was getting the right call. But, you know, I still would have maybe $700 to $800 million left, and I could still work with that. I've been in a lot worse situations, and I actually had Mike Madison called up Robbie the other day. It was a pretty funny story, and he goes, Robert, I just watched the 50K final table. You know what I noticed? That your mother likes Grindr more than she likes you. So I thought that was pretty fun.
What has Robert said to you since then, Michael? Did he come up to you afterwards and say, how can you call me there?
Oh, you saw it on television when he says, you call me with that? I don't know if you saw that part.
Yeah, I did.
But, you know, I tease him here and there once in a while. But, you know, he got over it real quick, and, you know, he got a nice little percentage there, so I'm sure he was happy.
Oh, you guys had swapped percentages ahead of time?
We made a pretty good swap. He got 10% of me, so we swapped 10% of each other. So I'm sure he was happy.
Oh, well, I guarantee he's on the sideline cheering you on in that. Another question that we've asked some of the other people: it is the final nine. It is, you know, the World Series of Poker. Are you looking to talk to anybody specifically to get any kind of coaching, to do any special preps for this final table in the next 60 days?
Am I doing well? Well, first off, what I'm doing is I'm not doing any coaching, but I'm actually coaching. I'm going to be coaching people for Deep Stacks Live and out of South Florida and more in all the South Florida venues. I'll be at Mardi Gras on September 10th in Hallandale Beach, Florida. So I'll be teaching poker players how to become a poker professional, basically, and teach them, you know, give them as much intelligence as I can about poker and as much information, and just show them how to be the grinder.
For our listeners who may not be familiar with Deep Stacks Live, this is literally live poker training from big-name pros. I know the Mouth is involved in that and a couple of others as well. And you guys actually sit at a poker table, deal out some hands, and give advice on how people are actually supposed to play their hands or what they may have done right or wrong, right?
This is correct. I've done one school a few years ago with Phil Helmuth. I mean, I don't have much training on teaching, but I do a great job. Last time I had a lot of great feedback, and people love me, and I felt like, you know, this is the time for me to teach and to show people what it takes to make the November 9 or to win tournaments, or, you know, just to get where I'm at. You know, trust me, it's a tough, tough way to make a living, and I'm going to try to make it easy for everyone else.
Well, I can just imagine you on the table there teaching them, because, and knowing you, I think you would be very blunt with them and say, this is what you should do, and, you know, or tell them if they're doing it wrong. I've seen too many people kind of wimp around it and say, well, you could maybe this or whatever. Nah. I have a feeling that you would be a teacher that would tell them exactly what you thought, and they would respect that.
Yeah, there's not going to be any ifs in my class. This is what you do, and that's it. And, you know, my creativity level is very high. I have my own imagination, and so sometimes I do stuff where I don't even know why I do it, but then I realize it's the best play. So I've done crazy stuff before, and it turned out to be worked out well. Like, oh, my God, I can't be the bluff there, but it should work. And I made it look like a hand, and people, you know, end up folding. So, you know, I'm going to try to teach people, you know, the creative side of the game and make a lot of flows and, you know, just a lot of new stuff to the game. But it's more of a crash course, 6 to 8 hours. So I'm going to try to throw you as much advice I can give you, the much best advice I can give you in the 6 to 8 hours that I'll be teaching them.
Well, that ought to be perfect for Florida. They just changed the rules down there now, changing the limit that you can play. There's got to be a huge, group of people now that want to learn how to play and want to play at the higher levels. Are you doing a number of these, or?
Well, definitely I'm going to do as many as I can do, but now I'm going to definitely be busy from now to November 9th. But I'm going to try to do at least two or three of them, and they're all be in South Florida. Most of my schools are going to be South Florida, because it's a lot easier for me to be in, because I live in Florida, and you know, I'm going to teach all the Florida players, you know, how to become a great tournament player.
Grinder, I've got to ask you about something. This may be a little bit of a sensitive subject, but I've got to ask about this. 2 years ago, my partner here, Dennis, made the November 9, the first ever November 9, and that was his first ever World Series of Poker main event. He was a rookie. And so a few days before the main event, we set up a thing called the Chip Leader Challenge at the Hard Rock out there in Las Vegas, which was two tables of pros and high-stakes amateurs who each put up $10,000 to sit down and play, and Dennis was there, and Dennis's coach, Joe McGowan, was there. And, you know, Dennis wanted to be able to play against some really talented people and get some fun in as well a few days beforehand, and you were one of those who played in that. Now, we know that you're really good friends with Chino Ream.
Where are you going with this, Paul?
In fact, Chino was there cheering you on.
Chino's with me right now.
Okay.
He's right next to my side.
Okay, and we had Chino on the show just a few weeks ago, and we know he was there really rooting for you at the 50K and will be at the November 9 as well. Here's my question. Were you spying for Chino to see how Dennis played?
Was that what?
Spying for Chino to give Chino some information on Dennis?
Oh, was I spying for? Not at all. I wasn't. I don't know if that was a rumor or anything, but no, that's definitely not true.
No.
I remember. I'm pretty sure I can remember this knocking Dennis Phillips out of it.
You did. I also remember
yeah,
that
yeah,
I was.
I think I sucked out. I think I had ace queen or you had ace king or something like that.
I had ace queen. You had ace jack.
Dennis campaigned my luck.
I have to go on the record now and say I'm really kidding about the whole thing, but Dennis. I have joked with Dennis about that because we knew of your friendship with Chino. I have been joking with Dennis for 2 years. You know that Grinder's only there to spy on you.
Well, I did give him a little tips, but not too much. I don't want to give Dennis Phillips. I don't want to give any tips away from him because he's a great guy. I let Chino work the hard way.
Okay,
that's great. Now
let him figure out himself.
Now, I want to go back to something about the main event here. I did some calculations here. With the money that you made for making the November 9, which was $811,000 and change, you're now 12th on the all-time money list. You pulled ahead of T.J. Cloutier. If you get to third place in November, you'll move up to second on the all-time list, ahead of Daniel Negreanu. And if you win it or come in second, you'll be the winningest tournament player in history. At the same time, you could become the player of the year for the World Series of Poker. Do you pay attention to that sort of stuff?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it might, hurt my game. Just like, oh, look what I could know this. I don't want anything to affect my game. I just want to play poker when I get there. And you can give me everyone can tell me, oh, this way, after I won, what I've done, what have I accomplished? Then I'll feel a lot better. But for now, I don't want anything to scare me, to put pressure on me. But I know this. Everyone told me I'll be if I get first or second, I'll be the most, have the most earnings in tournament history. I win the Player of the Year. It's stuff I know, but I want to keep it out of my head. I just want to stay focused when I get to the November 9, and I'm going to play my heart out and do my best I can.
I got another question for you, a quick one here. Have you noticed that people play any different against you now? Because now your face is plastered all over the place. You can't go anywhere without being recognized, I'm quite sure. You were famous before, but now, there's no wet and there's no hiding. Do people play different against you now in the last month or two? Have you noticed anything?
No, people just don't play me anymore. No, I really, during the World Series, I didn't see much play. A lot of people are afraid. I pick a lot of pots. I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of people, like the professional players, always think I'm bluffing a lot. So when they see me, they always assume I'm always bluffing. I'm like a Chino Ream. So I try to minimize the bluffs as much as I can, and I think that's helped my game a lot. And for the people that the amateurs, they let me get away with a lot of stuff. So there's a lot of plus and minuses, to my game, and I think there's the bigger picture is a big plus side, and I got away with a lot of stuff, and I got lucky as well. Obviously, you have to get lucky to make the November 9 and play really well. But it's such a large massive field, and 7,319 players. I mean, just to get there is really tough, and you got to overcome those bad beats.
Well, we're going to let you go because we know you're busy over there. You're in Cyprus. Are you playing in the 25K high roller event tomorrow?
I believe I am playing it. Yeah, most likely. I'm going to play the main event. And I'm going to play the 25K event. I don't know about the preliminaries, the smaller ones. I'm going to play these two and just enjoy my time here, enjoy the weather, and enjoy the scenery. It's definitely a beautiful place, and I'm just happy I came out here. I came here with Chino and my brother Eric. So we should have a great time, and it should be a lot of fun.
I want you to say hi to Chino for me. He's a pretty good guy too. We had him on here a couple of weeks ago. So don't take any lessons from him.
You want to put Chino
on? Sure, put him on.
All right, let's put Chino on.
Okay, thanks again, Grinder. We appreciate it.
What's up, guys? How you doing, fellas?
Hey, Chino. How's Cyprus treating you?
Cyprus is all right. We've been here one day, and I'm stuck about $50,000. I can't complain.
I think everything's normal. By tomorrow, you'll be 100 up. Hey, so
can't be so bad. How you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing great, my friend. Very, very good. So
are you guys about to make a little trip around Europe for the next month and a half?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess we're sort of going to do somewhat like what me and Dennis did in 08. And, you know, I think the most important tournament for that Mike wants to play during this three-month break would be the WSOP Europe.
Yep.
And anything else he wants to play is just, like, on a basic field, maybe just to, like, go. Like, we've never been to Cyprus, so we came here. It's our first time. It's not so bad at all. You know, it's real nice. So, and the food is great, and, you know, so we're here.
So did he bring you along as the chaperone to make sure he doesn't stay out too late at night?
Yeah, because that's what Chino would do.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. In kind words, I guess that's the best way you can put it. But yeah. I guess that's the nicest way you can say it. Yeah. I mean, I'm here just to, yeah, of course. You know, he's win or lose, make November 9 or not, Mike's always going to be one of my very best friends and closest friends. And, you know, it's just a phenomenal thing that he had such a great year. And we're all rooting for him, obviously. And, you know, during the three-month break, personally, like Dennis, me and you, we both know how it was. And it's 2 years down the road. We both got a little experience from it. So we're both going to, or I'm going to, you know, just try to, like, just make sure that, like, you know, nothing really worries him or stresses him out during the three-month break. And he doesn't have too much problems or whatnot. And just, like, he's kind of carefree. And he can do, like, you know, whatever he wants, spend a lot of time with his wife and his kids, and just, you know, during the 3 month break, just keep him, you know, at ease, and just, you know, let him play some poker, let him try to accomplish more great things during the 3 months, and if it doesn't happen, let him go into November 9 with a strong, focused mind, and just come in there and rip it up.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, one of the nice benefits of that I've discovered in the last couple of years is making new friends and the traveling around the world and the different things you can do and the camaraderie of it. You and the Grinder are two pretty good guys. I'm kind of proud to call you guys friends. So.
Yeah, of course. Dennis, let me tell everyone listening to the station, Dennis Phillips is a friend for life, guys, and it's more than one reason as not, but, you know, and he's saying the same thing as he's saying me and Mike are friends. Dennis is definitely a friend. He's one of the good guys. He told me. Right.
Well, again, I appreciate. Don't have too much fun in Cyprus, guys. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely not. I mean, we came here to work. I mean, there's 25K high rolls tomorrow, and then there's the main event and whatnot. When it's time to play poker, we definitely do take it serious, and it's, you know. But right now, we're gonna go enjoy a nice dinner at a restaurant and just relax before we play tomorrow. But, you know,
all right.
That's basically my plan while I'm traveling with Mike the whole time during the 3 months. Wherever we end up going, I'm just there to just make sure, like, everything goes smoothly for him and he has no extra problems.
All right. Well, tell Mike I'll see him in London and I'll see you there also, okay?
Sounds good, my friend. I'll see you guys in London.
All right. Take care.
Chino Ream and the Grinder, Michael Mizrachi, the guy with the greatest bookends of the 2010 World Series of Poker, winning the 50K Players Championship to start it and making the November 9 to finish it. And now he's just got to finish it all up when November rolls around and take that whole thing down. This is the Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. We're coming to you live from Harrah's in St. Louis, where they play poker here 24/7. With tournaments twice a day, every single day, multiple tables of it going on behind us right now. In fact, I think over a dozen tables, probably more than that, maybe 15 tables in action right now, with lots of people playing in that 1 o'clock event this afternoon, and more coming back to play in the 7 o'clock. There are live games going on here, Limit, No Limit, PLO, sometimes Horse gets going on the weekend. If you're a poker player in the Midwest, come to Harrah's St. Louis. Go to the website, harrahs.com/STLPoker, for the tournament schedule and for details on what's playing, and get the Poker Room hotline number, call, and find out when your favorite game is being played. This is where we play. This is where we do the show every week, and you're invited to come join us anytime at Harrah's St. Louis. Back after this with more of the Final Table.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is the Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thanks again to the Grinder, Michael Mizrachi, for joining us here. By the way, Michael, like us, is on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You can follow Dennis at Dennis_Phillips. You can follow me as Paul Harris Show. And you can follow Michael Mizrachi as @TheGrinder44. That's his screen name on Twitter, and I'm sure he's tweeting a lot from Cyprus while he's over there.
And I'm quite sure with him and Chino and his brother and going through Europe for the next 2 months, there could be some interesting tweets.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, the members organization that supports poker players and is supported by poker players like us and hopefully by you. This is the group that's pushing in state houses and courthouses and on Capitol Hill for poker to be legal in all forms everywhere, not just in casinos, but in home games and online and everywhere else. The big story that we've been following for months has been the legislation, H.R. 2267, which got out of Barney Frank's committee a couple of weeks ago.
The Finance Committee in the House.
We covered that extensively on the show. There have been groups that were opposed to allowing Internet gambling to go forward. We talked about the major sports leagues being among those. This past week, the National Football League dropped its longstanding opposition to this bill.
Yeah, some of the wording in the bill is actually now what they can, quote, live with.
There was an amendment put forward by Representative Peter King from New York, which explicitly prohibits companies licensed under the legislation from offering sports betting except for paramutual racing. So horses are still going to be, you can still bet on the horses online,
yep,
but you can't bet on an NFL game or Major League Baseball or hockey or anything else.
The Rams versus anybody. Okay, let's not go there. Never mind.
Rookie quarterback and it's the Rams. You probably shouldn't take bets on that to begin with.
Okay, they got rid of the goose egg on the first week. They scored a touchdown. Granted, it wasn't the offense, but they scored a touchdown. So let's leave the Rams alone. They're starting out on a positive
note. Danny Amendola goes all the way. That's about all you're going to get from the Rams this year, and we're saying that as St. Louisans. But
I will support them, though.
But me too. But the NFL, we haven't heard from the other leagues yet.
No, well, the hockey league never had an objection to it, really.
Oh, is that right?
Not the way the others did, but baseball was probably the most stringent, and football the second.
Okay. I know the NFL was one of the leaders in trying to fight against the bill. Now they've withdrawn that opposition, so that's another step forward. What else do you hear from the PPA and from Capitol Hill?
There's actually a lot of undercurrents going on. We're not for sure what's going to happen, but there is a chance now that instead of being pushed to the lame duck session, that there may be something introduced into the Senate within the next 60 days. That's what we're pushing for.
Well, it's not going to happen for the next few weeks because Congress is on recess.
There's actually a lot going on in the next few weeks to prepare for that short period of time between when they come back and when the election actually takes place. So Capitol Hill is never silent, let me tell you.
Well, we talked last week about how it might be attached to some other bigger bill, like the UIGEA was when it was voted on in 2005.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's become more likely in the last week?
I would hope it is. I don't know if it is or isn't, but I would hope that it would be because it gets attached to the right bill, something rather with the funding that's available from this. That is money that's sorely needed in Washington, sorely needed for a lot of programs that are hurting right now.
Tens of billions of dollars.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This could do a lot of good for a lot of different social benefits. And why not attach it to one of the bills? Why not get it passed? Everybody's assuming. They absolutely are assuming in some form this is going to be passed. Why not do it now? Why wait 6 months or a year?
If you want to keep up with this, go to the Poker Players Alliance website, which is thepppa.org, thepppa.org. And if you're not a member yet, please join up, join us, join every other poker player who's in the PPA, and help them fight for the game that we all love. Now, we have to talk a little bit about the big game, which came back on Fox TV stations across the country last week. As we've mentioned before, unfortunately, Fox Channel 2 here in St. Louis does not carry it at 2 o'clock in the morning. They think infomercials are more important. I don't know why.
I don't know, but I really want to learn how to buy that skillet. That's all there is to it.
I watched last week's shows on PokerStars.tv, and as I mentioned last week, there were two loose cannons at the table. One, it was this music producer from upstate New York, Troy Howard, who was the official loose cannon, the guy who was staked with $100,000 by PokerStars to go in and play against Viffer and Antonio Esfandiari and Barry Greenstein and Chow Jang. But the sixth guy at the table was a millionaire entrepreneur, as they kept calling him, from Virginia, named Rick Rahim. And I talked last week on the show about how this guy was a loudmouth at the table who played way too many hands. He played like twice as many hands as Viffer, which I wouldn't think would be possible. Antonio ended up going broke during the week and being replaced by Isaac Haxton. Rick Rahim was way down, made a comeback to win about $66,000 after being, I think he was down in triple digits. But there's one hand I want to ask you about.
Okay, I have not seen the show.
All right, well, this was on the last night, Friday night. And remember, this guy Troy Howard, the loose cannon, was staked this 100K. And the way the big game works is it's pot limit pre-flop
right.
and then no limit after the flop. And the loose cannon only gets to keep what he makes over $100,000.
Correct.
So if he ends the night with $99,999, he gets nothing.
Correct.
Except a wonderful memory.
Yeah, but that's why they have the pot limit preflop, to keep him from just massively shoving there at the end.
Right.
To
okay. So Raheem and Viffer had been taunting Troy, who had been kind of tilted a little bit and was trying to give them some trash talk. And frankly, a lot of it was unnecessary. At this point, Troy was down about 13,000, so he's got like 87, and there are only 30 hands to go. The big game is set up so that they play exactly 150 hands, and they tell you how many hands you have left. So Rick, the millionaire entrepreneur, convinced Troy to double straddle. The blinds are 2 and 400, Rick made it 800, and he convinced Troy to make it 1600. Okay, so now Viffer's under the gun. He calls with the 9 of clubs, 7 of spades. Or as Viffer would call it, a monster.
Definitely a quality hand.
Yeah, certainly in his range because it's two cards.
Yeah.
Rick, who...
Did he look at him first?
Yeah, well, it's funny. As I said, he's not the loosest guy at the table. This
okay,
guy, Rick,
yes.
is way the loosest guy at the table. Barry folds, Isaac folds, Chow folds, and we're back to Rick Raheem, who calls the 1600. Now, Troy, who's double straddled, looks down at a pair of queens.
Sweet.
He can't shove his 87K here,
yeah.
which wouldn't be a good move anyway, but he can pot it, and he does for 7,600. Viffer calls with his 9-7 offsuit, and Rick folds. So the pot is 18,000. The flop comes out 5-5-4. Troy is first to act. He checks the flop. Viffer checks behind. The turn is the ace of spades. Now Troy bets with his two queens. He bets 10,000 into an 18,000 pot. Viffer calls. Now, for anybody who's thinking, why would Viffer call there with the 9-7 offsuit? Joe Stapleton explained on the show, it's clear that he's going to try to take this away
yes,
from him
absolutely.
On the river. Okay.
He's sitting position behind him. He makes a smooth call, which makes it appear as though he does have a good hand. And then if he checks on the river, he pops. Boom.
Right. The pot's now 38,000. The river is the three of hearts. So there's no straights, no flushes out. Well, there's technically a straight because you got the ace, 3-4-5-5 board. Troy bets 10,000. Viffer shoves, and Viffer's got way more than Troy. Troy has about 60K left. So this is for all of his chips. He folds. If he'd called, he would have been up over 64K for the week and become the leading loose cannon, which would help later on. But there's only 30 hands left. Shouldn't he have called no matter what?
I would have a very, very hard time laying that down. First of all, look who you're playing against. I wouldn't have played it the same way anyhow. I don't care. When you're out of position, you get under cards, you have your queens, you got a decent amount in the pot, get money in there.
You know, when I said that he checked the flop, sitting here right next to me, you winced. Like, what? He checked the flop with his queens on a 5-5-4 board? You think that keeps him out of trouble there, or does Viffer take advantage of the fact that the board is paired on the flop and he's going to go after him anyway?
Oh, he may go after him, but it's going to be much more difficult for him to go after him. Now the scare card comes with the ace. I would fire a second bullet and see what Viffer does. At that time, I would bet with a second bullet coming out, him being the loose cannon, he probably would have folded. I really think so.
Viffer would have folded?
If you fire the two, the second one on the turn.
Because Viffer's not going to put him on a five there. He didn't
obviously
pot it pre-flop with a five. It's entirely possible Viffer has one. But when that ace comes out, that's certainly within the range
yeah.
of the loose cannon to pot it there.
Yeah.
Now he's either got aces full or could have ace king or who knows
yeah.
what he's got there.
Again, betting on the flop, he could look on it as a continuation play and that he has an ace king, ace queen, something like that.
Yep.
When that ace comes in on the turn, I'm telling you, hands over probably.
Okay, but the important part of this is at the end when Troy bets 10,000
yeah.
and Viffer comes over the top for all of Troy's chips, again, remember the format here. If this guy doesn't make at least 100K, he has nothing.
Yeah.
So what is he risking by making the call there? He's either going to go broke, which he eventually did anyway, and there's only going to be another 20 or so hands left. Yep. Or he's going to get some money.
Two quick things on it. Number one, nobody likes to look like a fool on TV. And he's thinking, if he's got the ace, if he slow played me, whatever he's got, I'm in big trouble.
Yep.
And I'm going to look like a fool if I call him here and he's got some, if he has an ace five and he has a sitting on a boat.
Or a deuce. Any deuce beats him.
Well, there you go, too. So, I mean, all sorts of possibilities that way. But the other thing about it, we all in the back of our mind think, 20 more hands, I can catch aces the next hand. I can catch my kings. You know we can.
Yeah.
So we all have that thought in the back of our minds.
Viffer showed him the 9-7 offsuit.
Oh, nice guy.
To rub it in a little bit because, as I said, there'd been some trash talk going on. Anyway, that's it for us this week. If you want to play the big game, by the way, go to PokerStars.net. There are qualifiers all the time. He's Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. We'll see you next week on The Final Table.